You are listening to CEO Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.
Welcome to this episode of CEO Perspectives, a signature podcast and webcast series by the Conference Board. CEO Perspectives are conversations that take an objective, in-depth look at a variety of timely topics and how they matter most to business leaders. To help make sense of these topics and how they'll unfold, we'll sit down with thought leaders and do what we do best at the Conference Board, provide trusted insights for what's ahead. I'm Steve Odlin, the CEO of the Conference Board and the host of this series. And in today's conversation, we're going to talk about the U.S. healthcare system. What's the current state of the system? What's working? What isn't working? And how can we lower costs and improve outcomes? Joining me today is Steve Messenger, who's the managing partner at ECG Management Consultants, which focuses on the healthcare system. Steve is a recognized leader, longtime leader in the healthcare consulting industry. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you being here.
So just give a brief intro on your background. Talk a little bit more about your background in healthcare.
Well, I went to school thinking that I was going to go into medicine. And then a D in organic chemistry convinced me that probably medical school was not going to be in the cards. And it was a real blessing, to be honest with you, because I really enjoyed being in the consulting side of healthcare. And so just in shorthand, the work that I do and the work that our firm does is exclusively with healthcare providers. 99% of our clients are hospitals, doctors, large healthcare provider systems of a national nature and local regional nature.
Well, I'm really glad you got that D, and I won't ask you any questions on organic chem today, but your experience then is really applied, and you're working with the whole healthcare system, you know, writ large, and you're advising them on these strategic issues. So you're helping them think through all of this.
Yeah, and we're relatively full service. So we not only help organizations with things like operational improvements, but also with strategic positioning. And one of the hallmarks of the U.S. healthcare system is that, you know, despite the fact that it's huge and it's probably the largest single segment of the U.S. economy, it is constantly changing. It's probably one of the most heavily regulated, you know, total industry segments. And it's been under cost control, cost containment pressures by both employer groups as well as the US government from the beginning of my career, which really started in 1986. And so it's been a period of constant transformation and change that has been interesting because we've had a front row seat on all of the drivers of that change and have some insights as to where we are now and where we think this might be going.
Yeah, you know, and if you think back over the history of healthcare and, you know, you link it with the US, I think modern history really started in the 60s, didn't it? I mean, you know, we there wasn't such a thing as health insurance before the tax laws of the 50s where they were usurious. And so as a result, people started giving benefits and created the insurance industry. But talk a little bit about how U.S. healthcare has evolved over time, and then we'll get into where it is today.
Well, you know, you raised an interesting piece of healthcare. And we see insurance services in a variety of other, you know, industrial segments and variety of other applications. But one of the things that makes healthcare very unique is that the consumer, you know, you and I and everybody listening, is ultimately detached to a large degree from the economic consequences because of insurance. And so therefore, it makes us a little bit less consumer-driven and motivated to shop for the best deal in healthcare. And so that has a huge influence on how the healthcare system has been shaped and has grown. But if we go back, you know, way, way back when, in the early 1900s, most of the hospitals in the United States, or many of them, were formed by religious organizations. And so we owe a lot of the roots of the US healthcare system, is certainly the hospital system. We owe that to a lot of nuns and the convents setting up healthcare for, you know, rural areas, frontier towns, and those sorts of things. And today we enjoy a very, very large healthcare system that is rooted in religious orders. Another piece of the healthcare system that evolved was doctors that would get together and start clinics and start their own hospitals. And that was really the birth of what we call the for-profit healthcare system that we know today, that's rooted in organizations like HCA and Tenet. And then we have the government that got involved with the Veterans Administration and other governmental sponsored healthcare entities. And over time, we saw that these organizations went from very general, non-specific sort of carriage trade entities in their local communities to now, you know, multi-billion dollar corporations that have grown in terms of their influence and the kinds of capabilities that they provide. The health insurance industry, as you said, it came along in the 50s, really revolutionized the way that we think about the financing of healthcare and made it possible for more and more people to access healthcare because of the, you know, the concept of pooled insurance risks.
Yeah, and you know, we probably should tell the listeners that your dad was a doctor and worked in a relatively rural area, and so you, this has been part of your life, you know, for as long as you've known. But you know, it's interesting going back to your point on the hospital system, and it was all not for profit, and it was charity driven because it was never meant to be a for profit business, or it was never thought of as a for-profit business. And you probably have stories in your own household, you know, and how people paid your dad for services. You know, there are famous stories of chickens being, you know, dropped off in exchange for services, but it wasn't viewed from a consumer standpoint. It was viewed more from an urgent care or worse kind of standpoint. And those are the roots of the system, right?
Again, way, way back when I was a child, you know, every Christmas, people would line up and give cookies, chickens, as you said, to my father in exchange for services because they couldn't afford it. And the role of the healthcare provider, the doctor, the nurse, has really changed over time with specialization and with advances in technology. So it used to be a long time ago, you had a doctor, and that doctor was, in essence, your care manager. You went to that doctor with all of the problems that you had, all of the lifestyle issues. They advised you on how to maintain better health care, how to, you know, eat well, exercise, all of those things. And you fast forward now to the technology advancements and the other clinical advancements that we've had. And now the doctor's role has changed from being mainly a generalist type of an individual in the main to something that is very, very specialized. You know, as an example, general surgeons used to have a tremendous range of surgeries they would do. Now, with the advent of more specialization, general surgery is really shrunk, and you have specialists that just do breast surgery, just do colorectal surgery, just do, you know, other types of surgery that used to be the province of the general surgeon. That specialization has enhanced the quality and outcomes dramatically, but it's come at a relatively significant cost because it's resulted in an incredible amount of fragmentation, and that fragmentation and lack of communication and connectivity has created other problems that were never anticipated that we're wrestling with right now in terms of how do we actually have a more connected healthcare system that drives better qualities and outcomes for somebody holistically, as opposed to, I need to go to a place for just my heart care, or a place, you know, just because I have a problem with my kidney or a problem with my joint, to something that's a little bit more holistic.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to remind people that life expectancy was relatively short, you know, going all the way back to the 30s or just to the 30s, you know, life expectancy in this country was only 64, 65 years old. So, you know, the whole hospital system was dealing with, you know, really acute care. It was a not-for-profit, it was a donation kind of business, and doctors kind of set their own prices. So this whole advent of the insurance company, which came out of the tax system where, you know, the taxes were so high, people wanted to pass benefits on, the insurance became part of that. But, you know, it was meant to be for catastrophic issues, not for to pay for everything. And that has evolved into a fee-for-service system. And I really think that, you know, you've talked about it, but that fee-for-service system has colored everything that we do. Talk a little bit, what is fee-for-service? How did it come about? And how has it impacted everything up to this point?
Well, fee-for-service is very similarly to the way you pay other tradesmen and tradeswomen. So it is, you provide a service and you're charged for that service, just like you pay your plumber or your, you know, heating and air conditioner, electrician. And so for every specific service that is rendered, you're going to get a bill from the doctor and probably a bill from the hospital. And depending on the type of service you have, if it was a surgery, you're going to get a separate bill from the anesthesiologist. And there have been, and so there is an obvious incentive for increasing utilization. So the more surgeries I do, the more hips I replace, the better I'm going to do as a physician. And that has been a hallmark of our system since the beginning. There was a movement, when you recall the term managed care, there was this movement right at the beginning of the Clinton presidency to look at, are there ways we could prepay for healthcare? And under this theory of capitation, which is from an actuarial perspective, they know about how much money an individual is going to spend on healthcare over a year. And could you go to a health system and say, in exchange for a certain amount of money that you would pay every month, will you treat all of my healthcare issues for that year? And that was a very popular notion that experiments in California and Minneapolis and a variety of other markets were tried. But ultimately, what happened was that the insurance industry, in some cases, recognized that the risk that was being passed on by them was a huge source of their profitability. Hospitals weren't good and still aren't good at managing risk. Insurance companies are great at managing risk. That's how they're paid. And so therefore you had a couple of things that really thwarted much more spread of this idea of capitation and risk-based payments to healthcare systems. One was their inability to manage that financial risk and manage the utilization risk. In other words, they might have one or two patients that had a catastrophic disease, and that would take all of the, you know, all of those payments from the hospital. And so therefore they would run out of reserves. The other issue is that health insurers made all of their money based on their ability to manage risk. And so they saw themselves as passing along profitability to healthcare systems, and that was anathema to them. And so right now we see very little prepaid healthcare in the form of payments to hospitals. Let me add this real quick, Steve, is that the healthcare industry has changed dramatically since the Clinton administration and the whole, you know, first initiative of healthcare reform. It used to be that hospitals were these carriage trade organizations that saw sort of general acute care patients. They represented about 40% of the entire GDP then. They didn't employ physicians. They didn't invest in ambulatory assets, which is healthcare outside of the hospital four walls. And now what you see are hospitals that have own physician groups. They own a lot of imaging equipment, surgery centers that are not on the hospital campus. And now going from about 40% of GDP, now they are responsible for probably 60% of the GDP of healthcare. And so they become much more complicated, much more integrated, vertically and horizontal enterprises that are really the future of healthcare for a whole variety of reasons.
How do you describe the state that we're in now briefly? I mean, it feels like we're in a transition from, you know, this older model, you know, that what you described as the closed model, like a Kaiser or the HMO model. But it feels like we then went back to, you know, this more fee for service model and, you know, with everything being reimbursed. But does it feel, am I wrong? Does it feel like we're in transition to something else at this point?
Well, I think that you have to look at it from, I guess, a couple of perspectives. From the perspective of how healthcare is delivered and the costs of it, there has been this constant change at cost reduction. Going to the hospital is the most expensive possible scenario you can imagine. And So one of the pressures that employer groups, insurance organizations, the federal government has been placing on hospitals and physicians and other providers is to reduce the cost of care. And so one of the things that we see are organizations adopting what we call an asset light strategy, which is you think about the capital costs of investing in a hospital, they're huge. Care is now being rendered outside of the hospital environment, whether it is a hospital at home or an urgent care center outside of the emergency room, for example, or in an ambulatory surgery center where you can do 95% of the types of surgeries that heretofore have been done in a hospital, all done in a lower cost setting. And so care is moving very rapidly to these lower cost settings. And healthcare systems are trying to position themselves, meaning hospitals are trying to position themselves to be providers in that asset light strategy. The dilemma they have is that the revenue and profitability they have from admitting a patient to the hospital and having that hip replacement surgery done in the hospital is gargantuan relative to that same procedure that is done in an ambulatory care setting. And they might not even own that ambulatory surgery center. So there is a huge shift in where care is being provided to lower cost settings. And that is really challenging the essentially the profitability, the ability for hospitals to generate reserves and be self-sustaining. And so this huge shift in terms of where healthcare systems are investing their assets, their cash, to still be relevant in the future of healthcare, which is largely going to be outside of the hospital environment.
We've discussed how the U.S. healthcare system has evolved a little bit through its history. Next, we're going to explore the rising costs of healthcare and where are we going. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
As you and your company monitor the volatile and uncertain economy, the award-winning forecast team at the Conference Board predicts a downturn by the end of 2022. Recession will further compound the crises that have recently upended expectations, from a deadly pandemic to a war in Ukraine and the highest inflation in decades. Yet, unprecedented crises also present unforeseen opportunities if you have a trusted, proven navigator by your side. With that in mind, and as the Conference Board has always done, we are providing you with daily, timely, and relevant content that will guide the business community through the economic storm. These trusted insights are being gathered on our website and are available to help your company master the challenges. To find out how you can chart a course for the future which will allow your business to emerge stronger on the other side, visit our free economic hub entitled Navigating the Economic Storm, Your Indispensable Guide Through the Global Recession, located at conference-board.org/topics/recession.
Welcome back to CEO Perspectives. I'm the host, Steve Odlin, the CEO of the Conference Board, and today I'm joined by Steve Messenger, Managing Partner of ECG Management Consultants. Okay, so Steve, why is everything in healthcare so expensive?
There's a number of reasons for that. One, we have seen probably the largest single segment of growth in terms of expense growth is prescription drugs. And so you're hearing a lot politically about this opportunity to impose some price restrictions in terms of price increases in prescription drugs. We're one of the only economies in the more developed world that does not have price regulation. Most of the European Union countries have price regulation. And so the fact that the United States doesn't have price regulation of pharmaceuticals is a little bit odd and actually is causing a significant inflationary factor in healthcare. It represents somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% generally of the total healthcare GDP. So it's an important segment. It's not the biggest, but it's an important segment. The other reason why we see a lot of costs in healthcare is because of healthcare access and utilization. In the United States, unlike many European Union countries and other developing world systems, you have relatively unlimited access to healthcare. In Canada, in the UK, and in others, there is actually a frank system of rationing. So if you're a 75-year-old individual and you need coronary artery bypass surgery or you need a hip replacement, in the United Kingdom or in Canada, it is likely going to be very difficult for you to get access to those services, where in the United States, you're going to be able to get on the operating room table very, very quickly. And so that utilization is causing a tremendous amount of growth in healthcare costs.
But just to be clear, going back to what you said about drugs, so are you advocating for price controls? So you don't believe the free market is working in pharmaceuticals?
Well, I think that it's obviously very complicated because the way that healthcare is paid for in other countries, where we compare our total cost of care to those other countries, France, United Kingdom, Canada, Holland, all the European Union, they have price controls over every aspect of healthcare. You might call it socialized or not, but there are frank price controls, and the government sets limits on what prices can be charged for certain procedures and certain drugs. When we compare ourselves to those countries, one of the areas that pops out is pharmaceutical expenses and the cost of drugs. So I'm not suggesting the solution is that we ought to have price controls. All I'm suggesting is that one of the reasons for the inflationary process in healthcare is because of healthcare drugs are very expensive and are getting more expensive every day.
You know, in defense of pharma, just to look at the other side, I mean, they invest billions of dollars in these drugs trying to find them. It takes years to get them through the system to develop them, get them approved, and then they have very short patent life. So they have to make that money somewhere, or else we're not going to get the innovation in healthcare. And part of the problem, I think, is that all these other countries control their prices, so it leaves one market where they have to make their money. So, you know, there is a little bit of a global transfer of cost here, isn't there?
Well, there is a global transfer of cost and a global transfer of innovation, because if you think about innovation and the heart of innovation of healthcare, a tremendous amount of it happens in the United States. Now, a lot of drug development and the development of technologies that are then commercialized happens abroad because of the FDA and other agencies that impose greater restrictions in the United States than are those that are imposed in other countries. But I think, you know, there's a whole conversation on technology transfer, Steve, to the point you're making. But one of the great things about the American healthcare system is that there is tremendous amount of innovation in the United States that other countries are borrowing and using very, very well. And it's increasing the level of clinical quality and care and the way that you and I would be treated as opposed to the way our parents were treated years and years ago. So
yeah, and
this is a net benefit.
And then there's intellectual property theft that's going right on. So we're coming, hopefully, to the end of this COVID-19 pandemic. Some have said that it's over. Some have said it's not over. But clearly, we're several years into it. What do you think we've learned from this as it relates to the healthcare system? And what should we do different going forward?
Yeah, I actually don't. I think the data suggests we're not over it, but there's just too many deaths from COVID. But I think that a couple of things. One is that we've always known that there's an imbalance in the way the healthcare is paid for. So as an example, healthcare systems, hospitals, medical groups, you know, doctors are paid on the basis of fee-for-service, where the fee-for-service payments for procedures and episodes of care is much, much higher than for patient care management. COVID is a disease that requires patient care management. And so when COVID hit and all these people were hospitalized, you saw that there was a frank reduction in the number of procedures, surgical procedures that were considered elective. So you think about an elective procedure, if I need I need to have a coronary artery bypass for my heart, or I need to have a hip replacement, or I need to have a transplant. Those are not emergency procedures. Those are considered elective procedures. And all of those pay incredibly well relative to that patient who's sitting in the hospital for 20 days, 25 days with COVID on a ventilator or not on a ventilator, and they're just being managed with medications. What we saw was an incredible loss of wealth of our healthcare systems. I had a client in Buffalo, New York, that lost in excess of this is a billion-dollar healthcare system that lost in in 6 weeks lost reserves that had been trying to accumulate over 40 years. And so we saw this just tremendous outflow of profitability from hospital systems. And so they're really suffering now because they went through a lot of their strategic reserves for reinvestment and in programs and reinvestment in ambulatory assets and those kinds of things that we described. And they're really just trying to catch up. So I think what we learned is that we are the way that we pay for healthcare really favors procedures versus patient care management. And the dilemma with that, Steve, if you think about the other public health crisis that we have, which is mental health. Mental health is patient care management. It's not, there are no procedures behind it. And so therefore it is drastically underfunded. The mental health crisis that we have is almost like being in COVID since the 1990s every year because of the crisis of the ability for people to access a healthcare system because there are not enough providers because mental health care is paid for in such an abysmal fashion. So I think this has been a real wake-up call to how we think about what we pay for and how we pay for in a healthcare setting.
Okay, so you know, if you had Harry Potter's magic wand and you could wave it around and change some things in the healthcare system to address all these issues, what would you fix?
Well, I would fix, it's not glamorous or sexy. I would fix the mental health issue. I think it's a crisis, and I think that we have not been willing to pay for it. Employers, people, the federal government has not been willing to pay for it, and I think it's that's really going to haunt us.
But what would you do? What would you zap in order to fix that? Is it more facilities? Is it how do you manage it?
Well, when I started my career in the 80s, we had huge facilities, healthcare facilities that were just mental health hospitals. That entire system has been dismantled. I think that we should invest in facilities for mental health care. We should invest in training, frontline caregivers in mental health care. And I think that it gets back to the way that we think about the stigma of mental health care. So I think reinvestment in hospitals, care providers around mental health care is something that is really important. The other thing that I would change gets back to this. I think that the United States, we have the highest quality healthcare system in the world. Most foreign nationals, when they get sick, they want to come to the United States for healthcare because we have some of the best healthcare institutions that are easily accessible, where you're going to get the best outcomes. The issue that we have is that it is very difficult to wayfind. If you are sick, it's impossible for you to wayfind the healthcare system without expertise. So my father, who is a physician, has had problems accessing the healthcare system because even though he is a supposed expert, when it comes to some of these very specific nuanced areas, it's very difficult to find the right provider. And so many of the times, if you have a cancer or a heart ailment or something that's even mildly exotic, you have to rely on your own recognizance to find the right provider who is going to be able to take care of you. And that is, I think, an undue burden that is impacting satisfaction greatly in the American healthcare system.
Yeah. Really, really interesting. Yeah, you need an advocate, and you need a place to go. And you know, these closed systems, you know, whether it's HMO or Kaiser, one of the things they do is they have a place for you to go. They have a primary care, and that person does become the gatekeeper and kind of helps you navigate it. But it can be daunting. So that's the flip side of lots of options and lots of ways to treat things is that it's, you know, for those people who are not experts, they don't know how to do it.
Right. And, you know, getting back, when you think about, you know, my sense of the audience that's going to be listening to this, you know, employer groups, you know, the employer groups, I think, have not recognized the power and the leverage they have in being advocates for the kind of a healthcare system that they think is going to be most beneficial to their, you know, employees and their beneficiaries. Healthcare systems, hospitals would love to have better relationship with the employer groups, and are looking at direct relationships with employer groups to have a better understanding of what are the services and what are the ways that they would like their beneficiaries to access healthcare. What are the locations? What are the services that they would like to have? And so I think that we are in this transitionary period where employer groups can be very powerful in the way that healthcare is going to be structured in the future, not only the payments, but also things like access, things like quality of care, things like the level of service and the customer service orientation that has really been lacking in hospitals and medical groups that could be demanded by employer groups that I think would make a huge difference.
Yeah. Really interesting conversation, Steve. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much and enjoy the conversation, Steve.
And thanks to all of you for listening in to CEO Perspectives. Every week, I'll be joined by a prominent thought leader to deal with the issues of our time. We'll discuss leading topics in geopolitics, public policy, economics, ESG, human capital, and more. Please share CEO Perspectives with your colleagues, with your friends, with your family, with everyone. They're going to want to listen too. I'm Steve Odland, and this podcast has been brought to you by the Conference Board.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Conference Board, the indispensable ally that has helped businesses through war, recession, and economic transformation for over 100 years. As recent unexpected economic challenges persist, you can chart a course for the future which will allow your business to emerge stronger on the other side. Just visit our free economic hub entitled Navigating the Economic Storm, Your Indispensable Guide Through the Global Recession, located at www.conference-board.org/topics/recession.